thing that we find in this material world is meant to be used in the service of the Lord. If something is not being used in the service of the Lord, if it's being used for sense gratification or it's cut off from its source, it should be rejected, ultimately. So no material situation outside of, within the acceptable parameters of moral and religious codes is bad or undesirable if it is being used in the service of the Lord. One may have great intelligence, but if that intelligence is being used simply to propagate one's own egoistic program or plans, then that ultimately that intelligence is a deficiency or it's misused. If one's household life is not geared in such a way that all the family members are progressing towards Krishna consciousness, then that household life is a deep, dark well. And one who falls into such a deep, dark well, it's explained that it's very difficult to get out. So one has to make their situation Krishna conscious, no matter what they are, no matter who they are. Ultimately, that is the success in devotional service. But here, we're finding that Maharaj Ambarish is so advanced in his devotion to the Lord that he finds no pleasure in material things. And he can easily give it up. What does this say? It says that one's relationship with the Lord cannot be compared to anything in this material world. It is said simply by one drop of the mercy of the Lord can drown the entire world in pure love of God. Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami explains, as he's writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the glorification of the Lord, he explains that I'm standing on the ocean of the shore of devotion of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I'm trying to chase one drop. And that one drop is so powerful that he can drown the entire world in ecstatic love of God. This is what's available through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. It is explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that three categories of pleasure are mentioned. Pleasure derived from material life, pleasure derived from impersonal Brahman liberation, and pleasure derived from pure devotional service. It says that if you take the pleasure multiplied 1 million times of the happiness of Brahman liberation, it cannot even compare to one drop of pleasure in devotional service. What is the pleasure of Brahman liberation? The pleasure of Brahman liberation is that one is completely free from all miseries. Just imagine that there is no miseries, no suffering. One is feeling complete joy and happiness simply in their own realization. But of course, that is temporary. And of course, there is no devotional service in that. Because there is no devotional service, and because it's temporary, there's no real lasting happiness. So, therefore, it's not even compared. Devotional service is not even compared to material happiness. In fact, material happiness, by definition, is not even happiness. It goes on as happiness, or it goes on as a relief from suffering. That's what it really is, material happiness. When somehow the living entity finds some pleasure or some relief from the suffering. I remember when I was in preaching in India last year. It was actually the beginning of this year, in January, I think. And we were giving one lecture in a place called Pune. And during the question and answer period, one boy, nice, asked this question. He said, my friend is always telling me that before you can experience pleasure, you must experience pain. How can you know pleasure unless you know pain? So I told him, my answer was, I said, that's a very nice theory, it sounds nice, but I told him that is the philosophy of the moron. You know what a moron is? Anybody know what a moron is? It's more off, really, more off than on. But a moron is an idiot. It's an idiot. So I told him, your philosophy is quite idiotic. And there's a little caricature. This person who is known as a moron, he's banging his head against the wall. Against the stone wall, he's hitting his head against it as hard as he can. So his friend comes over and says, what are you doing? He said, I'm hitting my head against the wall. He said, why? He said, because when I stop, I'll feel so good. I feel really happy when I stop hitting my head against the wall. So in order to feel pleasure, I must create this pain. So I told him, I said, that's your philosophy. That's the moron philosophy. He was kind of bewildered. So I told him, I said, you should try that on your friend. You should get a pair of shoes and start beating him with it. And when he says, why are you beating me? He said, because I want you to feel pleasure when I stop. So that's material life. Srila Prabhupada explains, and Srimad Bhagavatam explains, that happiness in the material world is like that. If there's some stopping of the pain for a few moments, then that's called material happiness. Srila Prabhupada tells a story wherein there's a king, his name, I forgot his name, but he had one servant whose name was Gopal. And Gopal was the court jester. Kings, to be a king means to be in a situation where you're always involved with material affairs. So kings have a tendency to be very serious, very stoic. So in order to break their monotony, they have to have somebody to make them laugh. So they have a court jester. So the king came in one day and he was telling everyone, oh, my wife just had a beautiful baby boy. He was so happy. He was telling everybody. So everyone was saying, oh, king, this is so nice. Congratulations. We're very happy for you. So he went to Gopal. Gopal said, oh, that's so nice, king. I'm so happy I could pass duel. The king said, what? He said, king, I'm so happy I could pass duel. So he said, you're a nonsense. And he got mad and walked away. So the next day, there was a hunting trip. And the king takes Gopal on these trips, so they go out together. So they were out, and they were in a boat, and they were rowing along the river. And the king said to Gopal, Gopal was rowing the boat. He said, pull the boat over to the side, please. I have to respond to nature. And Gopal said, okay. And somebody kept rowing. He just kept rowing and rowing and rowing like this. So after some time, the king said, Gopal, please pull the boat over to the side. I've got to take care of some business. So Gopal said, yeah. Okay. And after a while, Gopal wasn't doing anything different. He just kept rowing the boat. So after some time, the king got quite animated and quite upset. He started yelling at Gopal, pull the boat over! So he pulls it over. He runs into the woods, comes out after a few moments, and he says, and he's smiling. Gopal says, how do you feel, king? King says, "Oh, I feel very happy." So then, you know, it kind of remained, kind of dawned on him, that's what Gopal said yesterday. And he said, he said, that's pretty much the happiness in the material world. It's a relief from suffering. Really, if you think about it, carefully consider what is material happiness, you'll see that all it is counteracting the miseries. You know, now it's winter time, it'll be cold. So we put the heat on, we think, oh, now we're enjoying. But what is it? It's a counteraction of the cold. Cold being a form of suffering. You go to warm climates, it's hot. And then you have the fan. And you're cool. Oh, you're in the AC. Right? You're hungry. So if you're hungry, that's a pain. That's a suffering. People die from hunger. So you eat. Counteract suffering. If you examine every material longing or hankering, you find that it's simply miserable. But when you somehow or other cover it up for a minute by finding some relief in the form of some sense gratification, you call it happiness. Happiness. So really, in the material world, there is no happiness. Real happiness is on the spiritual platform. In devotional service, it is said simply by chanting the holy names of the Lord just once, one can be relieved from all the material miseries that one can commit, from all material sins that one can commit for thousands and millions of lifetimes. Devotional service is susukam kartam avyayam. Raja vidya, raja gunya, Pavitam idam uttamam pravyaktavam gamam dharmam susukam kartam avyayam. Krishna says in the second verse of the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that this performance of devotional service is susukam. Susukam means, sukam means happiness, and susukam means very happy. Very happy. Sometimes we see devotees can chant and dance for hours and hours. Why? They're feeling great happiness in this process of chanting and dancing. No one can do these things unless there is some pleasure in it. Otherwise, it's impossible to do. No one can artificially, you know, act in a happy way. Sometimes people try to do that. There's a class of people called sahajyas who simply make a show of devotional service, but ultimately, inside, they're thinking of something else. But devotional service is very pleasing. It's very joyful. And just one drop of the mercy of the Lord can completely captivate a person where they lose all attraction for this material manifestation. There's a wonderful story. Those of you who have some knowledge of the Sri Sampradaya, there's one great acharya within the Sri Sampradaya whose name was Jamunacharya. Jamunacharya, when he was a young boy, in a debate, he won part of the kingdom. He was called Alabhandra. Alabhandra? One who conquers. He defeated one of the greatest scholars. And the king was so happy, and the queen was so happy, that they gave him part of the kingdom to rule. And he was about 12 years old, I think, when that happened. And so he became a king, a ruler. And you know what happens when you become king and ruler. You have so much facility to enjoy. And he did. And for years, he engaged in various types of sense gratification. And he had a spiritual master, he had brahminical training, but he left that all behind and simply became a debauchee for many years. So his spiritual master, was it Manmuni? What was his spiritual master's name? Not Narada Muni. I can't remember. he devised a plan to bring his disciple back. So there's one special vegetable that if you eat it, it makes your mind calm and peaceful. I don't know if it's native to America, but you can get it in India. It grows. So every day the king was sending out his servant to buy vegetables from the market to cook his lunch. So he would go out. So his spiritual master arranged for one man to meet his servant and give him this special vegetable as a gift. So he said, "Oh, I have a present for the king. Here's a very nice vegetable. If you prepare it in this way and give it to the king, he will like it very much." So he did that. So the man was happy and he prepared it for Jamunacharya. And so Jamunacharya was liking this. Every day he was getting this vegetable and he was becoming attached to it. And as he was eating it, after weeks and months were going on, his mind was being affected by this vegetable. It's becoming a little bit peaceful, a little bit less inclined to sense gratification. So one day, the man arranged not to be there to give his servant a vegetable, purposely. So that day, when his servant came back and prepared his lunch, he said, "Where's that vegetable?" He said, "Oh, this man didn't give it to me today." He said, "What man?" He said, "Well, every day I've been getting this vegetable from this one man who wants to offer you. And today he didn't come." He said, "Well, bring him here. I'd like to meet him." So he arranged for him to come. And then he came and he introduced himself. And then he started to talk. And then he explained that, "I am actually, you know, your godbrother. I am a servant of your spiritual master and he has sent me. Why are you wasting your time, you know, becoming a king? You're disengaging in all kinds of nonsense." And he preached to him really heavy. And Jamunacharya became a little bit enlightened by that. And gradually he gave it all up. Later on in his life, he came back again. He gave up the whole idea of ruling and he became a great acharya. In fact, he was one of the spiritual masters of the greatest of all acharyas in the south of India called Ramanujacharya. And in his writings, Jamunacharya writes that when I think about sense gratification in sex life, he uses the word, refers to sense gratification in the form of sex life. He says, "My lips curl in disgust and I want to spit." He used to be so involved in such activities. Now when he thinks about it, he becomes disgusted. So no one can think like that. No one can act like that unless they actually have a higher taste. Visayan binivar tante niharasya dehinam. Raso varjam raso pyasya param drisvani vartante. That one gets a higher taste, then one can give up the lower taste. The higher taste is devotional service to the Lord. That as we become Krishna conscious, it becomes sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. Material life reaches a certain level of acceptability and then it goes down. It's always going down. That's why people have to look for different and newer things to do. If you don't find different and newer things to do in your life, you can't really find any pleasure anymore. So that's material life. We take drugs, so we start off, "Oh, let me just have a little bit of downers, and then we'll have a little marijuana, but that's not good enough. Let's have a little bit of heroin, we need something better. And then cocaine, crack, you know." It just keeps getting more and more, and pretty soon you're locked up, put away as a junkie. You start off with something little, because you can't really satisfy yourself in any form of happiness in the material world. It just gets worse and worse and worse. That's material life. But Krishna consciousness means as soon as you come in contact with Krishna, it's getting better and better and better. Devotional service gets sweeter and sweeter as time goes on. What was difficult in the beginning becomes easy and routine after some time. And as we purify ourselves, Krishna actually reveals himself through the process of Krishna consciousness. We can talk to Krishna, we can dance with Krishna, we can serve the Lord and feel the presence of the Lord through that service. When we see the deity, we can actually feel that there is Krishna coming and actually giving me his special mercy, and we're attracted. The happiness of devotional service cannot be compared to anything anywhere throughout creation. Even the greatest forms of material happiness cannot compare. But we must try for it. We must go for it. We must have that faith and make the effort. And by that effort alone, you will be successful, because the effort is what Krishna wants to see. When he sees that effort, he reveals himself in so many wonderful ways. Srila Prabhupada was asked one time by one reporter, "Swamiji, you're chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. What do you get out of this? Do you get something, money or fame, or what do you get from chanting Hare Krishna?" Prabhupada said, "We get chanting from chanting. The more you chant, the better it gets. It gets more. You're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram. You're going like 2 rounds, 4 rounds, like 6 rounds. Oh my God, is there something else I can do?" So you get up to 8 rounds. And he said, "Let me just stick it out a little bit more. I only got 8 more rounds to go." And you get up to 12 rounds and it starts getting nice. And then you get to 14 rounds and you say, "Oh, it's only..." Then you get to the 16th round and you say, "Wow, let me do some more. This is getting better." And you keep chanting and chanting. And then actually, my theory is that real chanting begins on the 17th round. That when you do your responsible rounds, that's what you have to do. If you want the nectar, start with number 17. That's where it gets better. Because that you don't have to do. That's when Krishna's mercy starts to really pour in. Because you're doing it because you want to associate with Krishna in such a wonderful way. They had a little, on New Year's Day, one temple, small temple, little preaching center out in the middle of Montana, I think it was, somewhere. They did a japathon where they had devotees were chanting all day as a program. So there was some guests who were coming in, and as one guest, he gave a report. He said, "Gee, I didn't know chanting was so nice. When I got to my 64th round," he said, "I was so happy, I didn't want to stop." It's like that. When we just simply take it as a spiritual rule and regulation, we have to chant 16 rounds, it'll be like that. It'll be difficult. But when we just keep chanting and chanting and chanting, it gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. Because it's Krishna. Krishna is his name. He is non-different in his name. You want to associate with the Lord. Lord Chaitanya had made that association available through the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. If we simply practice like this, no doubt Krishna's mercy will be available. One time someone asked Prabhupada, "How do you feel when you chant?" Prabhupada said, "I feel powerful." Great power comes from chanting the holy names of the Lord. And all the power of the universe is in that name. All the power of creation is in that name. It's the supreme perfection of all power. And there's many stories to illustrate how devotees have been absorbed in chanting the holy names. And that we are coming up to a very important holy day, the disappearance day of Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. On the 14th of this month is his disappearance day. And there's a few books that describe his life. That one time in his life, he made a vow to chant 1 billion names of God. Can you imagine? 1 billion names. It took him many years, but he found a little bhajan kutir, created a little bhajan kutir in Mayapur. Dham, and he was sitting there despite all the weather, and he was little shack with a, had a hole in the roof. It would rain, all the water would come in. And he sat there day after day chanting. He was exactly doing the same program as Haridas Thakur. He would do something like 300,000 names every day. And he was chanting like that for years. And I think it took him something like 5-6 years or more to finish 1 billion names of God. Isn't that boring? Don't you really need to turn on the TV once in a while and just break the monotony? Or just stretch out a little bit and have a 7-up or something? No. The holy name is the complete satisfaction. There's nothing outside of the holy name. Everything is there within the holy name. But Krishna is not, it says, if you want liberation, Krishna says, here, take it. You want material happiness? Take it. Whatever you want, come, I'll give you. If you want pure devotional service? That you have to work for. Krishna will give you liberation. He'll throw it at you. Here. Material happiness? Have some money. Have some sex life. Have some comfort. Hey, you can have it any. Unlimited. There's tons of it out there. Go get it. Krishna will just throw it at you. You want pure devotional service? Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Krishna is not so inclined to give it that easy. Why? Because once you have that, you have everything. And you don't want anything else. Dobu Mangala Thakur, he's standing, he's praying. He says, Bhukti and Mukti are knocking on my door. Can we come in? And I'm opening the door and saying, oh, yes. And they say, how can we serve you? So Bhukti and Mukti are standing at my doorstep asking, how can they serve me? Because I've taken full shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And Bhukti is material happiness and Bhukti is liberation. But these things are automatically there in devotional service. Okay, so we're getting to the very end, and as today is Sunday, there is some program. So I'll stop here. Any questions? Comments on anything? Yes, Murari Chaitanya Prabhu.
Can you give
service? Without serving the devotees? No, can't get it. This chapter is the essence of that. Is the, if you want to get pure love of God, you have to become the servant of Krishna's devotees. Ami tu tanga Krishna Krishna bole tave pa tave pare pache pache. That one is running after the spiritual master and the pure devotee, saying, my dear Lord, you have Krishna, please give it to me. Give him to me. You can't get Krishna directly. You have to get Krishna through Krishna's devotees. And the more you serve the devotees, the more you get Krishna's mercy. Why? Because Krishna invests his everything in his devotees. His devotees are so dear to him. Yes? What it means to serve his devotees? Now, we must serve the pure devotee. We serve the pure devotee by following his instructions and carrying out his desires. That must be done. We serve the other devotees by assisting them in their devotional service. Whatever way you can assist the person in their devotional service, that is service. Now, just doing anything not necessarily means service. You have to do something to help them in their Krishna consciousness. You may tell them about Krishna. You may do something for them personally. You may, any way you can, through your body, your mind, your intelligence, assist another person in their Krishna consciousness. That is called service to the devotees. And when it's done with love and affection, it's very pleasing. Like that. That's ultimately the understanding. Now, it's understood that ultimately the quality that attracts Krishna the most is humility. Humility attracts Krishna more than anything else. And becoming humble to God but not becoming humble to his devotees means really you're not humble at all. If you can't be humble with his devotees, then you can't be humble to God. Really, he's not going to accept your humility because it's pretentious, it's artificial. It's hard because ego is there. But ultimately, that's how Krishna consciousness works. It works on the basis of trying to assist others in Krishna consciousness, whatever way you can. Now, if we can't figure out how to do it, then all we have to do is refer to one verse in the Nectar of Instructions, Bhakti Upadeshamrita, which explains that there are six exchanges of love between devotees. To give a gift, to receive a gift, to reveal one's mind confidentially, and to hear confidential thoughts, and to give prasadam and to accept prasadam. These are the six exchanges of love between devotees. Srila Prabhupada said, I have created this Krishna conscious society in order to facilitate these six exchanges. So we may not be able to figure out so many ways, but if we can do one of these six things. So therefore, you'll see that your spiritual life is really much dependent on how much you serve others. You can't make advancement unless you're serving the devotees, really. There's no question of any advancement. You do your prescribed duty, that you have to do. If you have a service that's given to you by the temple authorities, you do that. But you have to see that in your contact with other devotees, you should have a service attitude. If you ignore the other devotees, if you think the other devotees are in your way when you do your service, your service is so important that everybody else is in the way. And then, you know, that's not very Krishna conscious. We do our service, and we stay fixed in our service, but in our contact with the other devotees, we should be kind, considerate, tolerant, patient, friendly, accommodating, whatever way we can do. If a devotee asks you, hey, could you do this for me? That's a great opportunity to please Krishna. And to please that devotee. Really. The heart of a real devotee is not that he wants to be served, is he's looking for the opportunity for service. A devotee wants to serve. His real happiness is serving. And he finds the greatest happiness in serving Krishna's devotees. Because he knows that more than anything, this pleases Krishna. Really. When we try to become Krishna conscious by our own arrangements, we always feel there's something lacking. Why? Because we're not really understanding the importance of community like that. There's a beautiful, beautiful story, which I don't know if we have time for, but it's a wonderful story. I just heard it recently again. I've heard it a number of times. It's from another tradition. Would you like to hear the story? Do we have time? It'll take about 5 minutes, maybe. Yeah? Okay. The story is from another tradition. Around the Middle Ages, there was this one monastery somewhere in Europe. And it was flourishing
quite strongly. Many people were coming, and there were many brothers in the monastery. It was very popular. But as time went on, things started to go down. People stopped coming, many of the brothers were leaving. And then it got to a point where after so many years, there was only 6 brothers left, and hardly anyone was coming anymore. So, one day, the news came that the rabbi was coming to the area. So he was traveling. So one of the brothers said to the abbot, "Why don't you go and meet the rabbi and ask him to help us? You know, we used to be really a big ashram here with nothing. Nobody, no one's coming. It seems like everyone's losing their enthusiasm. What do we do?" So the abbot thought it was a good idea. So the rabbi was there, and he was in the forest. So he came and he met the rabbi. And they were friends. He had known the rabbi. So they became good friends, and they started talking, and they were just very relaxed. And he was about to leave. And then the rabbi said to him, "Is there anything you wanted to ask me?" He said, "Oh, yes, I actually forgot why I came." He said, "Yes." They were enjoying each other's company so much. He said, "You know, many years ago, we had so many people were coming, and the monastery was flourishing nicely, and we had beautiful gardens, and there were so many brothers. But over the years now, in the last few years, everything's gone down. There's only 6 of us left. Hardly anyone comes anymore. Now maybe you can give us some advice what to do." He said, "Well, I don't know really what to say, but I know one thing for sure. This is a truth, that one of those brothers is the Messiah." He said, "Which one?" He said, "I don't know, but I know for sure one of them is the Messiah, chosen by the Lord." So the abbot went back. So the brothers came. When he came, "What did he say? What advice did he give us?" He said, "Really, he couldn't give us anything practical, but he did say that one of us is the Messiah." "Really? Well, which one?" He didn't say. So they were thinking. They were looking at each other. "One of us is the Messiah. Which one?" So each one were thinking in their own way. "Well, Brother John, you know, he works hard, but he's always complaining. But he's really, really works hard. And, you know, Brother Josh, he sleeps a lot, but he's always right when he speaks." So they were starting to notice all the good qualities in each other. They stopped looking for the negativity. They started seeing the good qualities. And so in that, they were all worried which one might be the Messiah. So they started to serve each other like each one was the most important. So this went on for some time. They were serving each other because they didn't want to make offense to the Messiah. So after some time, people started coming back. People started visiting again. Other people were coming, and they started to join. So again, the monastery started to flourish. So that's the story. But the point is, when Krishna sees that kind of love and cooperation amongst devotees, all of a sudden his mercy starts coming in so wonderfully. When there's fighting, when there's tension, when there's posturing, when there's criticism, when there's all negativity, or when there's even just, "I have to tolerate you because you happen to be here," then we really don't find much happiness. And we look for happiness somewhere else. Let me go out and get a job. Or let me do something different, you know, because we're looking for something. I'll tell you a story. This is not a story. I was in Gita Nagari last month. And right after the Gita Nagari temple opening, we had a meeting. And so some of the senior devotees were there, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj and many others. And we were discussing some arrangements for making preaching better within the United States. So the topic came up, why do people leave ISKCON? So the statistics, they took the statistics. Last year was one of the biggest migrations away from our movement. Something like 1,000 people left last year. And one of the reasons, number one reason why people left, number one, was lack of meaningful Vaishnav relationships. That was the reason. No real deep relationships amongst devotees. It's either very superficial or very just mechanical. This movement is meant to love God. And you can't not love each other and at the same time love God. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So that love is shown by how much we work together to push on Krishna consciousness. How much we tolerate and assist each other in our devotional service. That was the number one reason why people left, because lack of relationships. So we see throughout the scriptures that Vaishnav etiquette and relationships is the foundation of our Krishna consciousness. It doesn't take much. Even if you're shy, even if you really feel a little shy in relationship to others, still you can serve in such a way. Like I know devotees who are not very personal, but they're still always doing some kind of service for the Vaishnavas. They may make, you know, do something just to please somebody, maybe in a less direct way. That's considered to be service. You can do everything according to your personality. That is Krishna consciousness. When you see that, you'll see it is so wonderful. And the devotees are happy. Don't look outside for anything else. And then when you chant and dance, you do it together. When you come together to discuss philosophy, there's so much enthusiasm as part of that. Because there's so much stimulation. So these are some pretty simple points, but that's the foundation of our Krishna consciousness. And you can't expect everyone to do it. You have to do it. You have to be the person to do it. If you want everyone else to be like that, it's not right. You have to ask to come from, each person has to come from themselves. They have to make the effort. Yes? That was the statistic I heard. 1,000 people left our movement worldwide. That's worldwide. The second reason why people left was lack of relevancy in their personal life. They couldn't connect their needs with the temple's way of doing things. They felt there was a strong dichotomy between maintaining themselves and performing devotional service, which is also due to a lack of personal. And the third reason why was that using the celibate ashram, brahmacharis, for fundraisers. Brahmacharis are meant to be preachers, they're meant to be servants, but they're not meant for fundraising. Fundraisings are meant really to come from the grihastha community. The grihastha community is supposed to be the financial support of our society. Brahmacharis are meant to be the preachers, the legs. They preach, they study the books, and they work on different programs like that. They shouldn't be engaged in so many money programs. It makes it difficult for their spiritual development. So these were the three reasons. But the first one is the one we're talking about. Lack of meaningful relationships. One of the things we used to do in New Vrindavan when I first join the movement is in order to bring about some kind of communication amongst devotees throughout the day is that you'd come up to somebody and say, What did they say in Bhagavatam class? Tell me a little bit about the Bhagavatam class. And it was like a test, a little game, because it helped you still stay awake in class. One of the problems was falling asleep in class. So you'd have to listen to class, because somebody would come up to you sometime during the day and say, what did he say? And then you'd have to kind of like repeat it. Or you can come up to somebody and say, what are you reading? Which books are you reading? Tell me a little bit about what you're reading. That's Vaishnava Seva. Because as soon as you start talking about what you're reading, you're talking about Krishna, or Krishna consciousness. And then all of a sudden, but sometimes we just talk about, well, you know, we criticize this, or we find fault in that.